New Zealand banking just changed all the rules, and you could be forgiven for not having heard about it, despite the fact that this could change everything about how you handle your money. Open banking is officially live, slipping in right at the end of the year. It's not just a tech update. It's a power shift on who holds your financial information.
Open banking is really about recognizing that data sharing is now going to be commonplace. It's recognizing the value of data to you, the consumer, and it's about giving you a better way to share that data with third parties.
Now, this could mean so many parts of your money life get easier, from budgeting to comparing mortgage rates and even making investing simpler.
People have been excluded from the financial system because the system is so rigid. A lot of people probably don't really know how good it can get. And so the future really is quite bright in terms of how we can use that data to help you be better.
And frankly, we could all do with some help on this because there's been some fair criticism about whether the big banks are making too much money off us. This could flip that script. That's not to say it's all plain sailing, though.
Currently, what we're looking at is the ability to share data. Shortly after, the ability to make payments as well. Whether or not account switching is going to be a reality, that remains to be seen. I can switch from Westpac to ASB and I don't have to change any of my automatic payments or, you know.
Amazing.
These are the friction points that we see that keep us sticky.
So how do you make the most of this to make your money life easier while protecting yourself from some of the dangers that could lurk below the surface? Let's get into it. Welcome, CEO and co-founder of PocketSmith, Jason Long. Thank you so much for coming back on. I feel like it's been yonks since we talked. And it's been...
It might have been pre-COVID last time we caught up in person. And the world is so different then, wasn't it?
Even this year, I feel like has been a big year in money. How's things been sort of feeling in your neck of the woods? You talk to people a lot about budgeting and money. So how's it all feeling?
I think the world has really taken a turn in this last year. And so the cost of living continues to bite. But I think if there's a positive that comes from it, that money is really on everyone's mind at the moment. It's probably a good thing that we're all kind of resetting and thinking a bit more about our finances and, you know, as a consequence, thinking about our futures and our goals. So it's really a pathway to being a bit more conscious about where we're at.
Gets us refocused, huh?
I'm just trying to be positive.
Silver linings. Life got hard. Oh, it's refocusing us. Hey, we've got to keep an eye on the silver linings, yeah. I think. It's funny because I was literally just talking to someone this morning who does work in the news area. So they keep an eye on current events. And yet I mentioned to them, oh, you know, having a chat about open banking today. And they turned to me and said, what's that? Which I think is really indicative. Open banking, huge change, has kind of just slipped in under the radar at the tail end of the year.
Yeah.
So what is it? Can you run us through open banking, plain English? What's just happened?
So if you think about it, like if you've got a few trusted people getting access to your house, you know, they come to house it for you, you'd give them each a set of keys. And the risk of someone breaking in because of that is low, but it is not zero. So open banking is really about recognizing that data sharing is now going to be commonplace. It's recognizing the value of data to you, the consumer, and it's about giving you a better way to share that data with third parties. In the old days, if you wanted to share your data with third parties, you would effectively have to give them the keys to your online banking. Now, you'd basically, it's like a smart home. The right people who come to the door will get access, and people who don't, you don't want them to get access to your home anymore, you can just say, I'm going to revoke that consent. So in the banking world, it's about the banks being prompted to share your data with third parties so you can open up your finances to get value from that data. So the second part of the story is, well, then what value can you get from that data, right? And a lot of people probably don't really know how good it can get. So I like to think about it like, if you think about health data, someone takes your blood pressure, your temperature, your eyesight, all of this is in service of understanding you as a person and how to treat you if you're unwell, or how to set benchmarks for being better. So why should we care about open banking? Well, this data, there's so much you could actually do with it. And so the future really is quite bright in terms of how we can use that data to help you be better.
That's exactly it. When I was chatting to this person this morning, they were like, oh, but you know, what does that help with? And I was like, well, for starters, nobody likes budgeting. The biggest way that I can guarantee some of my content will tank is if I put budget in the title. Yeah, everyone wants help with it, but nobody really wants to think about it. Nobody really wants to do it. And I get it because I don't want to do it either.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you set all this data up to get it done for you automatically and just give you the end result of like, oh, here, FYI, here's a problem.
100%.
Yeah. And it just makes life a bit easier. And you can... Once you've got all this info at your fingertips, you have access to all of these little upgrades that just stack up, stack up, stack up. And the way they stack up is so much bigger than each one individually. Money, I think, can be a real mental drain sometimes. Not always, but for quite a few people and in some areas. And when you make it easier to manage, you make it so much easier to get ahead with your finances. I mean, even we've talked a lot about the lack of competition in New Zealand. We are a small to medium market. We don't have a heck of a lot of competition, and our customers are notoriously sticky. We tend to stay at the same place, just being polite and not asking for better and not shopping around. So this is even supposed to make that better, right? The competition side of things and getting a better deal.
Yes. And that's often touted as one of the big benefits of open banking. However, we've got to remember that it really, what we have now is just the start. I'd like to think of open banking like Wi-Fi. I have a story that I tell about first discovering Wi-Fi in 2003 and how amazing it was because I could get internet over the air. But when I told my friends about it, they were like, okay, this is great, but like, why would we use it? Because if you think about it, in like 2003, smartphones weren't invented yet. Facebook would be invented in 2004. Your phones certainly didn't have cameras. We couldn't upload things to the cloud. So there were very few things you could use Wi-Fi for. When you think about it today, you can activate it in flight. You know, when you're flying in between continents or in your hotel room, it's ubiquitous. But the thing is, your device interacts directly with so many services that are available over Wi-Fi. So we don't talk about Wi-Fi as a thing. It's infrastructure. It's in the background. But what we talk about are the services available to you on your device. And so we need to think about open banking like that. It's not about just one single thing that open banking can deliver to us. It's about the problems that we believe it can solve. And like time savings is another massive benefit that open banking can bring. So when's the last time you applied for a loan?
Applied for or renewed?
Either or, like, so that's exactly the case study I'm thinking about here. Okay. It's me. Last week, I've had the same credit card with Westpac for over a decade now. But Westpac isn't my primary bank. My mortgage is with ASB. And so when I went back and said, oh, I want to apply for a new credit card, they said, oh, actually, it's been such a long time since you've applied for credit with us. Even though you do have existing credit, we've got to go through the entire process all over again.
You're already in my nightmare. Like, I hate life admin so much. It's an ongoing discussion. Every bit of life admin that I can, I hand over to my husband. But like financial stuff, you can't. And so you're exactly. Already like, no, like I'm so triggered.
So yeah,
please continue.
So buckle up because this is exactly how I felt. I thought, okay, do I really want this new, but you know, yes, because it offers me better air points and so on and so forth. So I said, okay, I'm just going to give it a shot. The nice thing is that the steps sort of like reveal themselves to you like a kind of a labyrinth of horrors as you go. So, you know, it's not bad at the start, but it gets worse. No shade on Westpac here. It's just part of the process. So here's what I went through. First of all, I had to go online, the online banking product. There's a form to fill in with some basic information about what I earn, some of my fixed overheads, what my assets are. And it felt like a pretty small form. I thought, well, this is very simple. It took me maybe about 15 minutes. Submitted it. And then I was told that I would get a phone call from the bank. It would take, you know, 25 minutes just to go over a few more details. Now, this call went for an hour and a half.
Oh,
but here's the thing. I was so intrigued, like, what could they possibly ask you? Well, everything. And I was lucky enough that I am a PocketSmith user. So I, when I'm asked about how much I'm spending on insurances, what did I spend on fuel in the last year or car maintenance, I can pull those reports up. But it still took me an hour and a half. And I was still scrambling to work PocketSmith to pull out those insights. And I'm like, well, if you didn't have this information at your fingertips, how long would this call take? After that, I got a request for evidence. It was maybe a 4.5 hour journey. Now, open banking, like all that data exists with my bank, with my insurers. I should be able to just tell Westpac, I want to give
go for it.
You
yes,
consent.
Here it is.
Exactly. Yeah. For the purposes of understanding if I qualify for this new credit card, I give you access to my home loan bank and pull the information you need. You should understand my spending as well. So if I give you access to that, consent to use that data to analyze it for purposes of fast-tracking my application, to your point, it is a nightmare.
I would literally rather be doing anything else. Anything else. Staring at a blank wall. I would... Anything else?
Well, that's how I felt. Yeah. In fact, I did sort of, you want to see my soul lift out of my body midway through a phone conversation about my finances with the banker. Absolutely. I had to really kind of suck it back in. Have you ever had to suck your soul back into your body?
I can do this. I'm an adult.
Yes. Open banking is about giving you the option to use your data to save you time and no doubt save the bank time as well. They don't want to be sitting on the phone with me for an hour and a half. Going all the way back to what it is, just think of it as infrastructure and think about the jobs you want to solve, all the pain points in your life around finances that you think, if there isn't an app for this, there probably should be one. And with open banking as the infrastructure, now that my data can, I can consent to my data being used, somebody should make an app for it. Now we can say that. In the past, we couldn't because the banks would say, sorry, there's no way for you to access your data in a legitimate fashion. That's why we had to hand out those keys.
Yeah, well, exactly. It was your own data, but you couldn't give permission for other people to have it, which was odd. But in the same way, you know, you mentioned their security. And I do understand, obviously, it's financial information. People get scammed all the time. There are things that can go wrong. And you do have to protect people's money because sometimes as well, when these scams happen, people turn around to the banks and say, well, why didn't you stop it?
Yes.
So with these changes, are there any sort of security issues or potential downsides that people should be aware of?
Not that we know of. It's a huge step forward in terms of security. What it means is that you have one point of truth for all of the places that you share your data to, and that is your bank. If there are any flaws, it's just to expect that as open banking gets embedded, there will be bugs to be fixed, not security flaws, but just in terms of the accuracy of the data, the purity of the data. We've seen this as PocketSmith is in 190 countries. We're working with existing open banking regimes in the UK and in Australia. In Australia, this was launched 5 or 6 years ago.
And it was so behind again.
Yeah. Well, there are a few things in our open banking regime that will help us leapfrog what they have in Australia.
Good. Yeah. I like to win the Trans-Tasman competition. What's better?
I think the biggest one is that our open banking is going to be closely tied to the Privacy Act. So over in Australia, some of the challenges they've had are around getting it right. This is what regulation means, right? So it's, yes, you get access to your data, but we all have to be careful about it. So that's why I'm saying security, probably not the issue we got to worry about here. It is potential flaws. It will be just because it's new. It's brand new, and people will be working hard to hammer out all of the rough edges.
Mm. We mentioned before about the issue of competition in New Zealand, and I do think it tends to happen. We see it in all sorts of industries where we'll get a few big players, and then there are worries about whether we're getting enough competition so that customers are getting a good deal. This is meant to help with that. Do you think it will?
Yes. And again, in the longer term, probably.
How long
not
do you think
immediate.
It might take?
I think about 42 months and 16 days, 22 hours.
Very specific.
Mark my words, Francis. It really is hard to say. New Zealand's a unique market because we have a small population and it's really hard to get a banking license here, and the banks have outsized power. So it will make a difference, but it really depends again on what some of these services are that are going to come to us via open banking. Currently, what we're looking at is the ability to share data. Shortly after, the ability to make payments as well. Whether or not account switching is going to be a reality, that remains to be seen. One of the big goals of open banking is to be able to have that number portability as well. So I can switch from Westpac to ASB and I don't have to change any of my automatic payments or, you know.
Amazing.
Just like what happened with phones, right? So you can just take your phone number with you. These are the friction points that we see that keep us sticky. And this is where that Wi-Fi situation is an interesting one for us all. The infrastructure is there, but we need to preach the benefits of what could be. And let's just keep pushing innovation. So we need better consumer education. Mm-hmm. And bless you for letting us talk about this here, just right on the cusp of open banking being launched. We want to continue the conversation.
Yeah. And do you know what, though, I love as well, when we have a conversation like this, and I think that the people who listen are people who are really super engaged and want to tell their friends about it. So I do think it's the sort of thing where people tend to send links and tell their friends and say, hey, by the way, do you know this has happened and now you can do this?
Yeah.
And it's partly that word of mouth thing as well, right? Where people tell friends who aren't necessarily watching the news or listening to personal finance podcasts and things like that, spreading the good word. So I love that. And we've talked a little bit about some of the things you see coming. What do you think could be some of the things that have been too difficult until now that could be on the horizon?
Like, what one of the first things we learned when we got into personal finance is that it's not a one-size-fits-all problem to solve. But there's so many products and services out there that treat us as if we're all like a homogenous type of, you know, like that money is just meant to be thought of in one way. But we know that people are so diverse.
As our lives are different, therefore our money is different.
Hopes and dreams are different. Our goals are different. And the way that we look at money, our mental map of our money is different. And that is true of the service that we're providing to our users over open banking. We are not prescriptive about how you look at your money. And that's been one of the most rewarding things about taking our product to market. One of the ways that you can look at your money through Pocketsmith is in a calendar. That's the genesis of our product. So we wanted to show people money in a visual way, and we believe in the alignment of time and money. So it's nice to be able to put in your calendar exactly when you're going to get paid and when you schedule bills to be paid out, as well as how much you'd like to spend, you know, groceries on a weekly, you know, basis, whatever. So that conceptualizes money in a slightly different way. I'll tell you a story about one of our users I met in Sydney. She told me that she has dyscalculia, which is I've learned is like dyslexia for money, is an inability to perform math because her brain just doesn't work that way. When she found Pocketsmith, she saw that, okay, there wasn't just this one way of looking at finances. She could configure it to look at her money in the way that made sense to her. Mm-hmm. And so this gave her, for the first time, an ability to understand her cash flow, to see what was coming, and to most importantly, understand her own financial situation and get control over it. We're so diverse, and I think people have been excluded from the financial system because the system is so rigid. And so open banking is about empowerment. And open banking, I believe, is about recognizing the diversity in thought and our ability to interact with our money is suddenly, I mean, again, if we push for innovation, there should be an app for us. There should be an app for how I see my finances and for the problems I want to solve with my money. We need to push for that. So I'm excited. I feel that we're there. We've been doing it. And there are a whole bunch of other products that are addressing the diverse ways that people look at their money. But I think, you know, I think there's going to be so many, many more options for people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's a really big thing as well. You know, when we were talking about some of the things before and how it can be this hours long process for what should be a fairly simple change. And sometimes, you know, when you said before, you know, you had this moment of, do I even want this? That's exactly the moment where I would have failed, because I would have been like, do I even want this?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Is it worth it?
Yeah. And I have been known to really make my life hard and go about things the hard way, because I don't want to deal with getting over that hump of the life admin of changing to the easier thing. And I think money stress has been sky high for a lot of people this year. This year has been a tough one for many people in all sorts of walks of life. And so I see a change like this, and I really hope that it's going to open up options to make people feel more in control. And then, as you say, from that control comes confidence. What sort of things do you think will make it easier for people to feel a bit more in control and a bit more confident with their money after this?
I think visibility is the key one. It all starts with that. There'll be many reasons why someone might feel out of control with their finances, but if they don't have visibility and clarity over their current situation, then, you know, nothing can come without that first thing. I thought about it like trying to cross the road blindfolded. Can you imagine how just horrifying that would be?
Yeah, like, that's immediately stressful.
You're standing at the side of the road, right? You put on a blindfold and you step out into traffic and you just hope that you don't get hit by a car. Or that someone's going to slow down for you. That's, I think a lot of people go through their financial lives like that. When you take the blindfold off, you still have to cross the road, but you can at least anticipate how quickly you're going to step forward, when you're going to pause to get across the lanes. That's what financial control feels like to me. It seems trite to say, but I do know also how challenging it is for someone to take that first step, to take a look at their money. It's hugely confronting, it's scary, and in itself is anxiety inducing to take a good hard look at your finances. But I will promise your listeners this, the pain is but temporary, and the relief that comes after is palpable.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. And that analogy of the blindfold, I think is so, so good, because it can be still legitimately difficult. There might still be things that you are trying to deal with, but being able to see it coming and navigate it, I do think that's such a good point. It's everything, and it does make you feel so much more confident and in control. Every time I've stopped avoiding a problem and just faced it, the problem hasn't necessarily disappeared, but I have felt better just looking at it head on and actually dealing with it like an adult. I hate having to be an adult. So many times I'm looking around, where's the adult in the room? Oh, it's me. I don't want it to be me. Can someone else be the adult today? I'm done with it. But what's kind of the flip side of that, do you think? Are there any tactics or behaviors or things that people often slip into that might keep them feeling broker than they need to feel?
I think there are probably two ways of looking at it. One is if you can actually put something aside for an emergency fund.
There's been research on that just like a little savings account, no matter how much you earn, because there are heaps of high earners who don't do this. It's one of the biggest things you can do to reduce money stress.
Yeah, just to know that, you know, life happens. There will always be unexpected expenses. One of the stressors and one of the reasons people would feel broke is, well, I actually can't afford now to pay for this, or I've got to make a choice between paying for A or B. And that's like, well, heck, that's feeling broke, right? The second thing I wanted to raise was that if and I've also been in the situation, James and I, when we founded the company, we went for 4 years without paying ourselves. So I know what it means to be broke. And it's super humbling. But also, what I learned during that time was that I was broke, but I wasn't unhappy. And so if you really have nothing left to put aside, one way to feel less broke, I think, is to remember to treat yourself and to be kind to yourself and to get a feeling of agency again, because the absence of money or not being able to spend on the things that you want removes that agency from you. It is supremely disempowering. And the best thing you can do to combat that is to treat yourself to something that doesn't require money, a walk, some time to yourself, doing something that you love. These things that take you out of the financial system, but establish who you are as a person of worth, that is worth caring for, that's a way to feel less broke.
Yeah, I love that. Coming back to what's actually important, because I do think we do often think, you know, you can't have enjoyment in life if you are in a phase where the budget is tight, or maybe you're hustling, you don't want to use that money for lots of things. But I was literally talking to a friend about this yesterday. We're basically complicated houseplants.
Yes.
We like a little bit of sunshine. We need food and water. And we quite like someone to talk to us or sing to us now and then. You know?
Yes.
We're complicated houseplants.
We are.
And seeing your friends, getting outside, having a bit of sunshine on your face, sometimes reminding yourself what's good in your life, it doesn't have to take any money. And I think that's a really important reality check.
Yeah, yeah. And when times are tough, that's all you can think about is just how tight finances are. Years ago, we ran a focus group with some people and it was a reasonably simple question. We asked them, how do you feel about money? How do you feel about money? And the answers were so varied. Some people said, I love it. I love it because it treats me to things. I can buy things with it. I can spend it on my family. Some other people said, I hate it. I hate it because I never have enough of it. I feel like I need to keep working. I've got to get another job just to supplement my income. I wish I didn't have to deal with it in my life at all. So it's the same commodity, but you know, people have varying emotional reactions to it. So the one thing to, you know, to free yourself from it is just to think about you as a complicated houseplant. The sunshine, the singing. I like
nobody
that,
get a spray bottle on me though. Like let's not go too literal. I'll be really upset if someone tries to mist me.
A little bit of mist goes a long way.
My water comes in the form of coffee. Anyone can buy me a coffee at any time. That's fine. Do you ever see, particularly when I think when people are times are tight, it's often surprising. Even then, when we feel like we're trying to take control of our money, there's often one or two little money leaks. So as someone who does get access to metadata, I'm sure you're not peering into people's personal accounts, but I'm sure you get access to metadata. Are there certain categories where money tends to leak out more often? And that if people are in a bit of a tough spot, they should check those categories first.
Mm. I don't even need to think about metadata to tell you it's subscriptions because they get renewed. Subscription prices are going up and we consume media, right? So everyone has probably at least one a Netflix account or a Spotify account. And they've certainly, I mean, I remember when Netflix launched in New Zealand, what was it, $9.95?
I know, those are the days.
What is it now? Like $33?
Way more.
Something like that with different plans. Look, the leaks happen in the places that we don't see, to your point. Like if we're not looking at our finances, they could be anywhere. And because our finances are so diverse, they could be, someone could, for example, have a sneaking coffee habit because they drink coffee instead of water. So
who could we be referring
who could that
to?
Be?
Nobody look over here.
And coffee prices aren't coming down.
Oh, I know.
Right? Like I was horrified that I rarely buy coffees out, but I paid $15 for a soy flat white.
That's a lot.
Blew my mind.
Was that at the airport or something?
I cannot remember. It honestly wiped, like, you know,
again, you just like trauma.
My soul tried to leave my body again. It happens often. And I was like, look, I need to taste this coffee. I pay $15 for it.
So I hope it was good.
I honestly
have
no memory of it.
If they burned it, I'd be so mad. It's always those $15 coffees as well that they burn it or something. And you're like, seriously? Seriously.
And you're already like halfway up the street. You can't turn around and go, you know what?
I'm too New Zealander for that anyway. I would just be like, yeah, no, it's great,
great.
And never go back.
Foot with your feet. It's a tough one. Everything's going up in price. And so we'd actually have to really pay attention to, we've got to make choices, right? So I'm probably going to cancel my Disney Plus.
all of these, yeah, especially the streaming platforms, I am minorly concerned by some of the consolidation happening. But at the same time, I'm like, well, I can't keep paying for these five different streaming platforms. Something needs to happen. And it's a classic, is that there's a reason that every business these days now tries to get you on a subscription model instead of just paying once. It's because you sign up for the subscription and then you forget you have it. I had a friend who I had done an episode like this. It's really funny having friends, and this is my job, because I never know how much they're paying attention.
Yes.
And I, of course, can't say to my friends, did you see my post the other day? Like, what a loser. I'm not going to do that. But sometimes I'll say, I saw your post and then I. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Yay. And so she'd seen something I'd said about go through your subscriptions, see what you've got. And she went through her subscriptions, and there was a subscription that she'd found and was like, I don't even know what that is. What is that? And it had this weird name and she couldn't figure it out. She figured out, but it was some sort of gaming subscription. It might have been an Xbox One where you were like subscribed to some sort of Xbox plan. She didn't even have an Xbox. She hasn't had an Xbox for 2 years.
Oh, right.
So this has been a monthly subscription coming out for years when she didn't even have it to use. And these things sneak in.
They're not cheap. You know, this would have amounted to $300 or $400 over those 2 years at least.
Definitely.
But here's a tip. You can ask for a refund.
Can you now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wouldn't hurt. You can ask for a refund. I'm not saying that you will get a refund, but as the CEO of a company that is a subscription business, I should hazard that it's not all subscription services are the same. So some, like software, require ongoing maintenance and staff and supports and building out the product and so on and so forth. But
at least make sure you're using it.
Yes, 100%. Please make sure you're using it and that you're seeing value from it.
Yeah, 100%. Mm. Now, you must see this a lot as well. Budgeting myths. People send them to me all the time. Does this work? Does that work? Does the other? And I would say probably 6 out of 10. I'm sort of like, ooh, don't like that one. So are there any budgeting myths that you see around that you think just need to die immediately?
Yeah, I think you dropped one earlier, which is that budgeting sucks. Or that it
budgeting myth, Francis, no.
I can't say that it doesn't suck, but it depends on your mindset, right? So
Fair. It
is a chore. Or is it a chore? It doesn't have to be a chore.
Okay. Hit us with how it should not be a chore.
You can automate it. So, you know, well, a part of what we do is to make budgeting easier. So you set it so that you can see your finances come into one place, and then you sit back and you set a budget and you stick to it. So I guess it's about finding ways to make it less of a chore for yourself. So yes, software can do that automation. Perhaps it is incentivizing yourself with a coffee at the end of it.
Oh, that would work.
One of the things that we love hearing about, and this comes up more often than we expect, it's our users saying that, hey, you know, it's like a Sunday evening. I'm in my smoking jacket by the fire and I have a glass of red wine. And I'm sitting down with my pocketsmith.
Bribe yourself with nice things. I'm so here for the bribery.
There we go. Yep, there we go. So, it doesn't have to be a chore. So that's myth number one. The second myth that needs to die is that budgeting is about deprivation. I think it's more about control. So it's about giving yourself permission to spend. It's not about limiting yourself. Well, I mean, it is to a degree as well, but it's both sides of the same coin.
But choosing
right?
where you want it to go. Because what's the old thing? If you don't tell your money where to go, you'll end up wondering where it went. That if you don't give it a direction, it'll find one. It probably won't be the direction you want it to go.
Exactly. And if you make a budget for yourself, it's a treat. So, you know, you can really turn the odds in your favor.
And put the treats in the budget.
Yes.
It's great. Have a treat budget. 100%. It doesn't all have to be like, I'm being such a good girl and this is like the best down to the dollar budget, you know?
Exactly.
Treats in the budget. It's great.
Yes. And the third one is related to that. Third myth is that if you go over budget, you've committed a crime. No one's going to send you to budget prison to hang out with the other over budgeters. Is that a thing? Yes. Yeah, I know. They're just sitting there in their striped outfits and they're like, damn it, I spent an extra.
Those copies. Extra $20. They got me again.
I mean, budgeting prison. No one's going to send you to budgeting prison for breaking your budget. Roll with the punches. It's okay. The main thing is being aware that you've gone over it. That's the whole point. If you want to continue to break that budget, then perhaps the budget just needs to be a bit bigger.
I love it. What a nice positive note to leave things on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jason Yong. You are CEO and co-founder of Pocket Smith. Thank you so much for coming back on again.
Thanks for having us. This has been so fun. Thanks, Francis.
It's been glorious. Now, if you enjoyed this episode and it helped you do better with your money, first of all, hit subscribe wherever you're listening to Making Sense. Secondly, send it to a friend as well so that they across all of this good stuff and we can all level up our money together. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.